One of the questions which must present itself to us at times in our lives is whether we can find some assurance that we live in an ordered and purposeful universe, and that there is some intelligent law by which the universe and man are governed. We see around us apparent chaos, not only in the lives of men, but in nature herself. From time to time, the earth is rent by earthquake, lashed by storms and tidal waves. Over the centuries, thousands or even millions of beings, animal and human, have been sucked up or swept away in the maelstrom of flood and hurricane, whilst others have died of famine and fire. Can there be a divine purpose in such phenomena of nature? And where does man, the apparently innocent victim, stand in relation to them? Even when we look up into the heavens, the millions of stars and galaxies appear to have been flung there by a giant hand in utter disarray, without purpose and reason. The same questions apply equally to man himself. If we look around us, we see apparently utter chaos and inequality. There are discord, distrust, and greed, and we cannot help asking what is the meaning of it all. True, we also see examples of friendship, brotherliness, and efforts to promote international concord, but we need to have an idea of some underlying goal or purpose in our life in order to explain the meaning of our existence and to dissolve the discord into harmony, the chaos into order. Now, the esoteric philosophy embodied in theosophy presents to us the very ancient and vast concept of the eternal rhythm of creation, in which is the cycle of evolution of life in form in all kingdoms of nature. If we begin to study this concept, we'll find that it's very logical and reasonable, and that behind the apparent disorder and aimlessness of manifestation, there is a plan, a pattern, a design, showing law and order and purpose for all created beings. Of course, the evolution of form is accepted in the field of science today. The many millions of different forms are shown to have emerged from simple to complex states and are coordinated and have their place in nature. This viewpoint, however, on its own is not sufficient, for it leads only to a materialistic conclusion as regards creation, denying the existence of any spirit or unseen force in manifestation. If, however, we introduce the concept of the unfolding life and consciousness within the form, and the flowing of that life into ever better and more evolved forms, we gain a very different picture. We see that life, which is eternal, has divided itself into units of consciousness, which are in essence one and indivisible, and these units are each unfolding in their own unique way. And so man in manifestation appears as a separate being, gradually unfolding his consciousness, and all the time as he evolves, moving into higher and more refined forms of self-expression. Thus we see that there is a cyclic process in which life is succeeded by apparent death, only to renew itself again in a wider expression of life. This is true not only in the human kingdom, but in the mineral, plant and animal kingdoms, where the life is constantly seeking wider expression. It's not, however, until the human kingdom is reached that the conception of I-ness is awakened, and man begins gradually to be aware of himself as a self-conscious spiritual being. All through nature we can see the process of alternate activity and quiescence. In our own lives it is exemplified by night and day, by sleeping and waking, by our in-breathing and out-breathing. In a wider sense, we see it in the passing of the seasons, the quiescence of autumn and winter, and the awakening of spring and summer. And so everywhere there are the dual processes of life and so-called death, not only in relation to individual beings, but in groups as well, in the rise and fall of civilizations. But always there comes the awakening. There is never final extinction. It's quite logical to expand this concept in relation to the whole of creation and think of it as an eternal cycle of forthgoing and return, within which are the many minor cycles of life and death, of night and day, as I have suggested. Thus we can expand our own cycles of being, our own personal lives indefinitely, realizing them as part of an eternal process of which there is no conceivable beginning or end, but an orderly progression which embraces all and shows the activity of intelligence behind the whole of manifestation, no matter at what level it may be. Most thinking people have some feeling of ultimate law, even though they are not able to define it. We find great minds in various fields of activity, seeking for laws which will reveal purpose and law and order to them. Writing in the New Outlook, Mr. C. R. Groves, Master of Science, pointed out that in spite of the fragmentation of science by specialization, science is always implicitly seeking unity. Thus Albert Einstein could write of science, "It is in the striving after the rational unification of the manifold that it encounters its greatest successes." Every scientific worker, said Mr. Groves, has an implicit faith in a unity underlying the diversity of his particular field. It's a natural outcome of the scientific method to try to find this unity principle from below, in the sense that there have been many efforts to explain the characteristics of living organisms in terms of complex chemical actions, and likewise to explain the behavior of man as arising from an aggregate of primitive instincts and reflexes conditioned by his environment. It is suggested that all such attempts must fail, however, because the phenomena of any level of reality can only be understood in terms of a higher and more inclusive reality. In other words, the approach must be from above, that is, from unity to diversity, rather than from below. This explains the old Hermetic axiom, as above, so below. The above, or the within, being the world of primary reality and causes. In other words, all that we perceive in this dense physical world must have a relation with and, in a certain way, represent the inner processes of which it is an effect. We must remember, too, that the universe reveals only a small part of itself to us. As the president of the Theosophical Society, Mr. N. Sri Ram, has written, "It is a universe of life and consciousness using forms of matter, vaster, subtler, more intricate, and more dynamic than it seems on the outside." Long ago, Madame H. B. Blavatsky, in her work The Secret Doctrine, stated that the material diversity of manifested nature has its roots in and draws its vitality from an underlying spiritual unity, and that the unifying principle is the one life which flows throughout all forms. Of course, if we pause to think about it, we can find many examples around us of evident law and design, despite the seeming diversity and complexity and even chaos. The formation and symmetry of crystals indicates, for example, the existence of pattern in the mineral kingdom. In the plant kingdom, we find the beautiful patterns and symmetry in leaves, the arrangement of petals in flowers, and in many other ways. In biology, the eternal miracle, the growth of life from a single cell, shows a continuing pattern according to inherent laws of nature. When we consider the earth, we find that there are so many exacting conditions necessary for life that they could not exist in proper relationship by chance. For instance, the earth rotates on its axis 1,000 miles an hour. If it turned at 100 miles an hour, our days and nights would be 10 times as long as now, and the hot sun would then burn up our vegetation each long day, and in the long night any surviving sprout would freeze. If the crust of the earth had been only 10 feet thicker, there would be no oxygen without which animal life would die. Had the ocean been a few feet deeper, carbon dioxide and oxygen would have been absorbed, and no vegetable life could exist. In that fine series in Life magazine some time ago, entitled The World We Live In, there was shown evidence of the harmony of the spheres. For all its complexity, the solar system reveals an order and harmony that has ever impressed scientists contemplating the laws that govern the motions of the skies. In 1955, it was announced that the University of California's Lick Observatory had found that the great bunches of stars called extragalactic nebulae are laid out in a gigantic system of order. And this yielded for the first time statistical evidence that the whole of creation has a pattern, although only an indeterminate part of it has been seen. It meant, scientists said, that there must be some great design in the way galaxies and their component stars, minor worlds, and dust clouds are arranged in space, and that they are not scattered haphazardly as some astronomers believed. This is a very recent step and was very significant in man's study of the universe, even though it deals only with the visible aspect of it. Of course, it's a task of terrific magnitude, as we'll realize, if we consider the vastness of the known universe. Our sun is just one star in a system of thousands of millions of stars, and our whole system is just one galaxy in a universe of thousands of millions of galaxies. Even more amazing and confounding to our finite minds is the finding reached by science that the atom is perceived to be a miniature solar system. While we gaze in awe at the star-strewn canopy of heaven, we could find equal wonder in the fact of galaxies, solar systems, and island universes floating about within a speck of dust. It is said that in the whirling depths of a grain of sand, there appear to be more particles than there are planets and stars in all the heavens. Writing on this subject in his book Truths Men Live By, Dr. John A. O'Brien refers to an occasion when Dr. George L. Clark, professor of X-ray chemistry at the University of Illinois, threw upon the screen an X-ray picture of a particle of soot. He said, and I quote, "I can still remember the expressions of wonderment and awe which came spontaneously from my students. Like frozen pieces of glorious architecture, there stood revealed geometric figures of remarkable symmetry and wonderful diversity. Indeed, within a speck of soot, there is perfection of symmetry in the arrangement of the molecules and an embodiment of mathematical precision which would make the Taj Mahal of India or St. Peter's Cathedral in Rome seem like child's play in comparison. At every step, atomic researchers encounter evidence of mathematical law of high order." Some of you may perhaps have read about the special kind of photography which has been developed at the Delawarr Laboratories in Oxford, England, where they use cameras to photograph radiations. This, of course, is not yet fully accepted scientifically, but it's well worth considering and following. These workers say that they have discovered that the internal pattern of any object is related to its energy pattern, that is, to the picture which its radiations etch in space. These energy patterns cannot, of course, be seen with the naked eye, but the new process of photography is able to record them and brings to light an invisible world which appears to be the framework on which the physical world is built. This work has been described by Langston Day. He says, and I quote, "Suppose we take a horse chestnut, a conker. If it is alive and healthy, it contains myriads of invisible radiations corresponding to the whole of its possible future as a chestnut tree. The camera can be tuned to record its potentiality to form roots, flowers, and so on, and it is possible to obtain actual photos of the future roots and flowers. Of course, this may seem an impossibility unless it is remembered that we are passing beyond the frontiers of time and space, and that seeds contain their potentialities for growth packed up inside them." One of the principal discoveries made by this team of researchers is that all forms of energy known to us arise from a basic cosmic energy which is everywhere and always. And so we see in this research and in others that there is beginning to be developed the concept that all patterns which are built and maintained at every level are expressions of one life, whose action can be seen as the unifying principle in the cosmos. H.B. Blavatsky has expressed it this way: wherever there is an atom of matter, a particle, there is life in it, however latent and unconscious. Of course, there are so many examples of law and order in the universe that, looking at them objectively, we cannot fail to recognize them as part of a larger plan or design. And as scientists proceed in their study of physical laws, they find themselves gradually proceeding into the world of symbols and even into the realm of metaphysics, always seeking an underlying unity. Dr. Albert Einstein indicated this in formulating his unified field theory, in which his object was to show in the broadest sense that all forms of nature, stars, planets, light, electricity, and even possibly the tiny particles inside the atom, obey the same basic universal laws. Unfortunately, Dr. Einstein died before he completed his work, but he did sufficient to show his deep faith in an underlying law of unity in the universe. In fact, he expressed that faith when he said, "Certain it is that a conviction akin to religious feeling of the rationality or intelligibility of the world lies behind all scientific work of a higher order." Other scientific men, too, have expressed their faith in intelligent design in the universe. William F. G. Swan, for instance, director of Bartle Research Foundation in the United States, has said, "Viewing the universe as a whole, I cannot escape the fact that it is of intelligent design." Dr. Kirtley Math, a professor of geology at the Harvard University, has written, "We live in a universe not of chance or caprice, but of law and order." There are many other quotations which I could give if there were time. A study of history also can reveal to us a pattern and a purpose if we can view it from the point of view of the unfolding story of humanity as a whole, rather than from the separate history of different races and nations. History, as recorded and known, is of course only a small fragment of the story of mankind as a whole. And yet, even viewing that small part, we can see that behind the rise and fall of civilizations, the struggles, the crises, an underlying pattern of progress, unfoldment, evolution. History should be viewed not as static, but as a dynamic, continuous story showing the mutual influence among nations and peoples and the growing sense of interdependence, which is moving very slowly but surely toward this greater sense of unity. A commentator in the Current Affairs Bulletin, referring to Arnold Toynbee, author of that immense work, A Study in History in 10 Volumes, says that Toynbee finds that there is a single continuing plan or purpose in human history, realizing itself through the ages. It is the movement of creation from God its source to God its goal. And this is the only journey, according to Toynbee, which can lead to a resting place for man, to a satisfying destination. Isn't it interesting to see how great minds are moving towards this concept of unity and purpose? The scientist seeking a universe of order and harmony, the historian finding it in the great panorama of history, pointing toward a spiritual commonwealth. The religionist too seeks the commonwealth of God, but sometimes this is thought of more as being in the world to come than rather than here in the world of manifestation. And his belief is very often based on a deep faith in ultimate righteousness, rather than on a study of the manifested universe. He thinks very often of God in terms of an external transcendent deity. The approach from the theosophical point of view is to include in our concept of the universe both the unseen as well as the seen worlds of nature, all of which are expressions of the one indwelling, immanent, divine life. Now, there's been published a transaction of the science group of the Theosophical Research Centre in England entitled This Ordered Universe, edited by Corona True, Doctor of Science. I'm going to draw on this now for a deeper consideration of the theosophical approach to this subject. A study of theosophical literature and philosophy leads to the view that there are three fundamental activities or qualities of nature, and that ultimately all the known laws of science and of life will be found to be special examples of these three fundamental principles. They are the laws of evolution, of equilibrium or harmony, and of periodicity. In human life, these can be seen as evolution, the law of cause and effect, or sowing and reaping, and reincarnation, or rebirth. Behind this threefold action, there is a oneness, the one universal law, a wholeness which transcends all diversity. Now, the esoteric philosophy postulates the existence of an ultimate principle of spiritual being, out of which all comes, and to which all ultimately returns, bearing the fruit of the evolutionary process. In the field of manifestation, this primary principle becomes active as eternal, perpetual motion, and manifests in the universe where the great rhythm of periodicity reigns, of ebb and flow, of flux and reflux. It's interesting to note that in 1956, the annual report of the Carnegie Institute of Washington contained the theory, indicated by latest scientific findings, that the universe may be pulsating like a gigantic heart, expanding and contracting in periods of many billions of years. This is in line with the theosophical and occult conception of the law of periodicity, of ebb and flow, which we've touched upon in this discussion. Now, within the complex field of manifestation, according to the metaphysical teaching, life and consciousness emerge. Through incarnation in form of atom, cell, plant, and animal, life increasingly expresses its potentialities. Finally emerging as man, it begins a new pilgrimage, that of the soul through greater and lesser cycles, until on the return cycle, man gains freedom to work within the law he now understands. The ancient wisdom has always taught that man, the microcosm, is a miniature replica of the whole macrocosm, the universe, and shares its essential nature and patterning. As the galaxy or island universe within which we live is a unit in space, separate from yet coexisting with countless other similar universes within the cosmos, so each man is an organic unity within himself, remains a true whole, and yet is related to all other men in the largest organized unit of society. At the physical level, the atom is the real unit or whole upon which the dense material world is built. The cell from which all plant organisms, simple and complex, are built forms the unit of the vegetable kingdom. The animal form and its associated group, that is, the pack or herd, represents a further unit. It is only man, however, with his wider vision, who can perceive the limitations of these wholes and sees that they are the elements in a larger unity. For man, the unit of consciousness is the individualized human spirit, using as its medium of expression mind, emotions, and physical body, which we call the personality. But man can go beyond the personality and, in his consciousness, open a wider vista. Through his inner experience, he may contact the larger whole of the universal life and finally become a channel for the spiritual force that is the basic power of the whole universe. Thus, the first law of manifestation, the unitary principle of wholeness or oneness, has a valid meaning at every level. And it follows that a realization of this wholeness and harmony is a necessary goal for humanity. We have still a long way to go before we achieve it, but each one of us in his own way can begin to recognize this unity within himself. So we learn from our study that the cyclic process of creation is a fundamental law of the universe, and that evolution is a manifestation of that one eternal cycle of creation in which and through which the universe exists. This same law is evident in man, in the life of whom the same eternal rhythm of creation is manifest. The life of a human being is but a day in the greater life of the eternal spirit, which is the true self in man. In this great cycle, we see the pilgrimage of the soul, passing through many lives on earth, traveling from unconscious unity with the divine, through ages of limitation and toil in matter, back to the divine from which he came, but now in full self-consciousness, bearing with him the fruit of his long eons of experience, expressed in wisdom, love, and truth. Having developed the powers and faculties of his own apparently separate self, he claims the divinity which he has never really lost, but of which he has been oblivious because of its veilings in matter. Now, this concept of evolution of the soul towards conscious union with the divine gives meaning and purpose to our lives. We begin to see that all is not chaos and chance. It's a practical idea. We can understand that just as the evolution of form as recognized by science shows our own physical body to be the outcome of a long process of physical evolution, so our consciousness within is seen as the outcome of an age-long unfurlment, from the simplest stirrings of intelligence until it has begun to flower and express itself and give promise of its future manifestation as a consciously divine unit of the one life. This viewpoint, too, logically leads to the idea of the law of reincarnation, of the many lives that each one of us must have had on earth to reach our present state of evolution, and the further lives ahead of us, until we achieve the biblical injunction, "Be therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect." We see how, through the law of cause and effect, of sowing and reaping, that our lives are causally connected, linked together like pearls on a string, and we ourselves mold and create by our own actions the conditions and environment into which we move for our future unfoldment and growth. Gradually, as we get a wider view of manifestation, the entire history or cycle of evolution of the universe becomes clearer to us, as well as the evolution of any particular world or being within that cycle. We see every object, every creature, every event, every person, every race, the world itself, as part of the eternal rhythm of creation, in which, as one writer has expressed it, all the millions of larger and smaller cycles of evolution are as the different chords which make up the great symphony of the universe. It is a symphony in which every note is vibrant with creative energy, and every one of us is a note or chord in that symphony. Now, the greatest truth which emerges from this study is the immanence of the divine principle, call it law, God, that, or by any other name, within the universe. There's no form in which the divine life is not manifest, for as it is said, even the humblest forms enshrine divinity. The hidden life is vibrating in every atom. So through the divine essence in each one of us, we are linked together causally with all manifestation. As the poet has said, "Thou canst not touch a flower without the troubling of a star." This, when we think about it deeply, reveals to us a certain responsibility in our actions, relating not only with our fellow beings, but also with life in all its forms, in all kingdoms of nature. We see in our human relationships particularly that brotherhood is a fact in nature, since we are all linked together by the one divine life which flows through all and which we all share. And we also learn that since the divine life is in each one of us, that man and God are one. And once that realization comes to us, we can begin to tread the path of self-discovery, contemplating the divinity within, and opening ourselves so that its light may shine ever more brightly in our lives and actions. And so this tremendous subject, with its vast overall picture of the cycle of creation, can have deep and real meaning for us, for we realize that each one of us can play a dynamic and purposeful part as conscious co-workers in the divine plan that is revealed to us. And though we should not be complacent about the world as we see it, we can have hope and faith in an ultimate decency of things. And thus we see that the universe is ruled by divine immutable law, which is that of harmony and balance, resolving all discord and moving to righteousness. This, of course, was the message, the essence of the message, of the Lord Buddha, who said in the poetic rendering of Edwin Arnold's The Light of Asia, these words, "Behold, I show you truth, lower than hell, higher than heaven, outside the utmost stars, further than Brahm doth dwell, before beginning and without an end, as space eternal and as surety sure. is fixed a power divine which moves to good. Only its laws endure. This is its touch upon the blossomed rose, the fashion of its hand-shaped lotus leaves. In dark soil and the silence of the seeds, the robe of spring it weaves. Out of the dark it wrought the heart of man, out of dull shells the pheasant's penciled neck. Ever at toil it brings to loveliness all ancient wrath and wreck. It maketh and unmaketh, mending all. What it hath wrought is better than had been. Slow grows the splendid pattern that it plans its wistful hands between. This is its work upon the things ye see. The unseen things are more, men's hearts and minds, the thoughts of people and their ways and wills, these too the great law binds. Such is the law which moves to righteousness, which none at last can turn aside or stay. The heart of it is love. The end of it is peace and consummation sweet. Obey. Goodbye, everybody.